Ladies and gentlemen, it's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hi, folks. It's The Other Podcast. I'm John Hoke. Stacy, I think to be picky, but you know, it's not really nighttime anymore. It's springtime. It's the 1st of May Day. Victims of Socialism Day. The sun is still out shining here, and I'm sure it is in Valdosta. How about that?
It sure is. And it was a glorious, glorious first of May.
We're having some kind of audio thing. Hang on.
Well, no, she's coming through. I'm not.
I'm not getting her on the headphones.
I know, but we're hearing her on some other device, and so I'm
okay. We're having minor technical difficulties, and while John tries to figure that out, I'll tell you that you can find his excellent writing and reporting this week at his blog hogwash.com.
Meanwhile, you can listen to Stacy on the podcast, or you can read him at theothermccain.com.
Anyway,
and you should.
There we go.
And you can read Diana indirectly at hogwash.com this week. Her expertise became a part of a Johnny at Sign episode that we'll get to a little bit. We'll get to it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, anyways, and in the news this week, it's not football season, but it's always football season for Alabama fans. The University of Alabama had six players go in the first round of the NFL draft, tying the all-time record, which was set in 2001 by Miami. Hmm. Six players, including Mac Jones, our quarterback, is going to Boston to be the New England Patriots quarterback. So hopefully he can step into those shoes left vacant by Tom Brady. Meanwhile, Jalen Waddle will be reunited with our former quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, at Miami. And other players, have gone elsewhere. But do you realize that Nick Saban, since becoming coach at the University of Alabama, has had more players drafted in the first round than Alabama has lost games? Okay, they've had I think it's 33 it's something.
They are one of the most successful football teams with a school attached.
They actually do have an excellent school down there. You know, the university, the success of the football team has made Alabama a place where everybody wants to go. I was just over the last week. I talked to a friend of mine in Douglas County, and he's thinking about moving. And I was checking where he's moving to: Elmore County, Alabama.
Okay. Well, you know, that's interesting. My father-in-law, on the other hand, was a Michigan alum.
Uh-huh.
And Michigan has been in the news, at least at your blog this week.
No,
that's
Michigan.
Your Tuesday.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're going. That it was
keep
a segue,
out,
wasn't it?
Yes. Keep your hand out of the potato chip bowl.
I'm sitting here. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I got distracted and was eating a potato chip. I keep them handy to get me through the podcast. Meanwhile, yes, this week a video went viral. Mm-hmm. A Michigan state representative fought with paramedics and state police troopers, then demanded to call Governor Gretchen Whitmer in a dash cam video that was released and went public. State Representative Jewel Jones crashed his vehicle April 6th and assaulted the first responders who attempted to assist him and his passengers. Both according to the news report, the passenger's pants were down as she vomited near the vehicle, while the Democrat representative's pants were partially down when paramedics arrived at the location on I-96. They ran into a ditch. Apparently, I mean, I don't want to speculate what they might have been doing on the interstate highway with their pants down. But apparently they weren't. This is what you call distracted driving.
Or backseat driving.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they were doing. Anyways, he demanded, he said, "I'll call Governor Whitmer right now. When I call Gretchen, I'll need y'all's IDs and badges. It's not going to be good for you. I run y'all budget, bro," Jones said, according to the video. And his blood alcohol level was more than double the legal limit. And so that's what the Michigan Democratic Party, that's their platform, as I understand it, is drunk sex, driving down the interstate, and I'm going to call Gretchen. By the way,
some things that once seen cannot be unseen.
Yeah.
Well, but on the other hand, this guy at least appeared to be aware of what was going on around him, which is more than we can say about every Democrat we're in the news these days.
Well, by the way, I want to welcome to our audience. I understand we have a Floridian. She's not Floridian. Anyways, we have some listeners in the audience tonight. Well, we're going to get to their stories
actually,
later.
We have someone who, I'm not sure where she was born, but she grew up in California.
Oh, we're going to get there too. Yes.
And we'll get to California as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, seriously.
Speaking of governors.
Speaking of presidents next, I'm not making this up, you know, but Joe Biden made a speech this week to an almost completely empty House of Representatives chamber. Excuse me just a second here while I cough. yes, the cough switch works. And during that speech, he made the statement that he thought that the January 6th brouhaha at the Capitol was the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
That is the stupidest thing I have ever heard in my life.
Well, given time, it's Joe Biden. He says more stupid things before his first cup of coffee than
you're right.
Well, none of the American citizens of Japanese ancestry interned by Roosevelt during the Second World War were available for comment.
Alas. Yeah, it's an assault on our democracy.
Not even George Takei.
As I pointed out, the key part of that phrase, our democracy, is the first person possessive pronoun, our. Who is we? Okay, who is us, our? To whom does this democracy belong, Joe Biden? Right?
Curiously, it's never our democracy unless a Democrat is disparaging other other people who didn't vote for them.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Meanwhile, the Republicans had a speaker available to offer a reply to the president's remarks. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina said that America is not a racist country. And from the reaction that I got from most Democrats, it was as if they said he said there was no racism in the country. And of course, if he said that would be absolutely untrue. Mm-hmm. We still have individual racists in the country. But over my 73 years, I have watched the country move away from a really pervasive form of racism.
Mm-hmm.
You no longer have white and colored water fountains.
John, how old were you in 1964?
Well, I was born in 1947, so I turned 17 that year, but I was born on New Year's Eve. So,
remember Jim Crow in action.
Yes, I distinctly remember Jim Crow in action. I distinctly had a father who was a lawyer who worked to keep on a pro bono basis to keep black people from being dispossessed of their houses through mortgage fraud. It was a very different time and place then.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to Nashville today, you don't have the same kind of environment between white folks and black folks. In many ways, it's actually more, in many ways, in certain areas, it's more strained, but in other ways, there is an acceptance of people for who they are, not how they're colored.
Mm.
And that's Martin Luther King's goal that he expressed in that speech that I watched live off television when he made it. But, I remember him saying that he wanted his children to be judged by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. And I see that change in society.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have is that there are certain people who make a living off of racism. There are politicians who need an issue. There are professionals in the helping professions who need somebody to manage or to serve. And they're, quite frankly, grifters running the same old scam, just with a little bit different spin on it each year. So, the way we solve the problem eventually completely is to take the power out of that politics, the power out of that management, the power out of that grift. And the reason we have the explosion of tension we have now is that people are afraid of what happened when we had an economy that reduced minority unemployment, that made minority income go to record levels. And that cuts out that, that cuts one of the legs off of that racist stool. And, that's what they're afraid of. And that's what we need to be on the lookout for.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in California, there's a place that has changed staggeringly racially. Mm-hmm. Even in I was there during the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And during the last few years of the 80s, I was running the engineering at a company that did oddball electronic work. So we had a lot of really talented people doing electronic assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started at the company, the notices about cleaning out the refrigerator at 3:30 on every Friday afternoon were in Spanish and in English. That changed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't notice the change in that sign until after I noticed something else. I'd been at the company about 2 years, and normally, I had lived on the border in Texas, and I picked up a little bit of Spanish, but it was Tex-Mex Spanish. It's not exactly the Spanish that's spoken in Southern California. So I really couldn't catch. I could kind of catch the drift of what was being said by people mm-hmm. in the break area. But one day I realized I was following the conversation completely. And the reason was is because they were speaking Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
You see, yep. I learned Vietnamese well before I learned Spanish. So, I looked at the refrigerator and the clean out notice was in Vietnamese and then Spanish and then English.
Mm-hmm.
So California has changed.
You know, I remember I'm of the exact age that the Vietnamese refugees arrived in our town. And, you know, wonderful people. The learning, the hilarity, mutual hilarity, by the way, about learning English and getting a real good, solid grasp of English was, you know, really common. The big thing that I remember was that all the Vietnamese kids were absolutely flabbergasted at fast food. Their whole thing was, this stuff is terrible. Why are you eating it? It's terrible.
Why? What is it that, what food?
Fast food.
Oh,
McDonald's,
fast.
So on and so forth. Their reaction was, this stuff is terrible. Mom does better than this. that was the big thing that I really remember was that I learned so much about food from the Vietnamese kids that came in junior high. Anyway, onward.
Anyways, I've got a post that went up this morning called Goodbye California.
And this segment has been tagged as Californication.
Yes. Anyways, I mention in there that every time I bring up the subject of California on the podcast, mm-hmm. I just have to sit back and shut up while my two fellow former Californians go on and on with their personal anecdotes. finally, the mismanagement of California has caught up with them. And in the mm-hmm. It was reported this week that California is losing a House seat for the first time in state history.
Which yep. what it means is enough middle class Americans of all sorts of races have fled, and they haven't imported enough Central Americans to make up the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And people. Part of the problem, this is very much an immigration related issue. And mm-hmm. when Tucker Carlson talks about replacement, the liberals go crazy and say that, well, this is a white supremacist conspiracy theory,
yeah, right.
But in California, replacement is not a theory, it's a fact. And
yep.
I talked about when I visited there about 10 years ago, and some of the conditions involved in that mm-hmm. that it connects, right? It mm-hmm. connects to the housing crisis, and people don't want to notice the connection between the demographic change and the housing crisis, right? Is that the fact is that immigrants, especially Mexican immigrants, they're used to, overcrowding. You want to talk about overcrowding and you're going to give them a 1500 square foot house and they're not, you think it's just going to be one or two people living there? No, my friend. The whole family comes, including their uncles, their cousins, and you end up with the situation, as I pointed out, how are you going to enforce zoning ordinances, right? Or disorderly conduct or public nuisance, whatever. in California, where they've decriminalized theft, drugs, as I said, who are you going to call, George Gascon?
Ah. The fact of the matter is that there was a kid here who was in the Young Entrepreneurs Academy, and she said that her ambition was to open a boutique in San Francisco. And I said, well, you don't really want to do that, because here's what happens. A mob comes in, and every single one of them has a calculator. They steal, they take in front of your eyes, with you unable to do anything about it, everything. Each one takes less than $950 worth of stuff. But there are 30 of them. So your store is stripped, and you have no recourse, because guess what? The cops will give you a form to fill out. Nothing will happen. You have been robbed, but you have no recourse.
But
nobody needs to put up with this.
But this kind of philosophy about how to deal with things even goes back into the mid-50s in California.
Oh, God, yes.
Let me explain something. We bought a house. Well, we lived in a rental house for the first couple of years we were in California before we decided we might stay a bit longer. Then we bought a house, and it was a very nice house built on a slab. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we moved to an older neighborhood, and why are you pointing at your microphone?
I'm trying to get away from it while I crunch it.
Ah, okay. He's in his chips again, folks. But anyway, we bought an older house. It had been built in 1932, and it had a basement.
Whoa.
Do you know how odd it was? A neighborhood, almost all of the houses in the neighborhood had been built before the Second World War. It was an older neighborhood, Santa Ana, and we at least had crawl spaces. And the reason why most houses in California stopped having basements in was and were built on slabs, which can be a plumbing nightmare. Was because the zoning in the beginning in the mid 50s required that a house have off street enclosed parking.
Yep.
That meant a garage. Well, in weather like California, a carport works just fine. You don't really have to worry about keeping the car warm or snow off of it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't rain enough for you to notice. So, you know, the cost of building a garage meant they couldn't afford to excavate for a basement to build a house for the same price. So guess what? And that's the kind of sticking your nose into other people's business that the California government had. California was one of the most progressive states going back even to the 19th century. And it went absolutely crazy after the Second World War.
Yeah. The micromanagement of everything. Everything was micromanaged.
And yet they can't enforce law. Your basic laws against theft, drugs, the kind of things that everybody, just takes for granted most of the rest of the country.
But see, the thing is that we have a political class now that wants to turn the rest of the country into California.
Trust me, anybody who has never lived in California, you do not want this. Avoid it at all costs.
On the other hand, we have these political consultants advising the opposition party to, well, let's just go for open borders and let's do this and let's do that.
No.
And, it now then becomes a controversial thing that Tucker Carlson, for example, would say, hey, maybe this is a bad idea and maybe this is bad advice. And so, Tucker Carlson's now become the lightning rod as opposed to Donald Trump, I guess.
Right, right. One of the things that has happened, the ratings tanked, right? Okay, after Biden was inaugurated, the ratings for CNN and fell completely off the table. I mean, it's they lost like 2/3 of their audience.
No, they lost 2/3 immediately, and they lost the rest when the airport deal crashed.
and so they are desperate for they need a bad guy to fire and with Trump banned from Twitter and everything. What they have done is they've tried to turn and CNN's programming. If you actually watch it, they go on and on about what's on Fox, you know, and you would think maybe some people would just like, hey, let's turn the channel and see if this is really true, but which is probably not good for CNN's ratings. But
well, anyway. Fox's ratings are much better than CNN's even still, and so maybe they're just trying to coast on their coattails. Or something.
Yeah, drafting as in the NASCAR. Well, anyways. Tucker Carlson on Friday night, folks, and I posted it up there with a story called Tucker Carlson douses Frank Luntz in gasoline and lights him on fire. Figuratively speaking, of course. But what happened is that I think it was Monday in a speech to a conservative conference. The video was posted to Twitter of Carlson, talking about these consultants and advisors who are the congressional Republicans not representing the people who elected them? So it's a real question. Mm-hmm. And he pointed to, some of these consultants and pollsters, and then he just goes Frank Luntz and then moves on. He just dropped that name in there and moved on. But anyway, someone tweeted that out to the attention of Frank Luntz, and Luntz responds by linking to a Daily Beast article that was attacking Carlson over something else. And so Tucker's like, oh, you want to play hardball? Well, I've got the biggest audience on cable TV. Let's talk about Frank Luntz.
Well, Frank Luntz maybe should have ought to look at Hogwash, because right up there at the top is the website's motto: never pick a fight with a man who buys pixels by the terabyte. Yeah. Well, never pick on the guy who's got the biggest cable audience either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so anyways, he just absolutely lit Luntz up Friday night. Now I've got the video in on the blog, and you can watch it. But imagine, I'm going to have to see how. Go ahead and talk.
Okay, what would you want me to talk about? Because I didn't know where you're going with that.
About this, Frank Luntz and the problem with the Republican Party.
Well, the whole problem.
Here's the thing: we, as a member in good standing of the Lowndes County GOP, I'm here to tell you that at our little convention, we were expressing extreme unhappiness with our Secretary of State, our Lieutenant Governor, and our Governor. We're trying to get people to actually listen. I mean, we had our representatives come and visit, and they're sitting and they're talking about, hey, we passed this tractor law, which actually made me giggle. But okay, a tractor law is probably in rural South Georgia is a good thing.
A tractor law.
About the fact that, hey, that tractor start or cotton picker or whatever is starting across that bridge. They have right away.
Ah.
Just accept this. The fact that we actually have to have a law for this instead of like, guys, they don't back up well, right? Being kind of sensible says a lot about the South Georgia carnival of bad driving. But anyway. But they're telling us about this, and what we really want to know is, why on earth did you guys pick staying on daylight savings time rather than just doing standard time? that kind of thing. Anyway, it's all right, but they're not listening. They're just not listening.
Yeah, the reason I was asking, I asked you to pause for a minute, because mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson has the biggest audience in cable TV news, 3 million viewers. Mm-hmm. So when he decides that he's going to light somebody up, you can bet, and Frank Luntz has got the blowback. You know, it's what they call a ratio in thing. And, but it's Tucker Carl, Frank Luntz, and there's a lot of other Republicans like him mm-hmm. who their mentality was set in place circa 1994, right? Mm-hmm. Through 2005. During that 20-year, a dozen years or so, right there from the Gingrich Revolution in Washington on until just before the war in Iraq went bad, and they still have this idea they're still fighting with the same mentality they had, and the Democrats have gone, you know. Completely different. This is not the Democratic Party of Harry Reid and Sam Nunn. It's just not the same party. You've got to update your tactics. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, but the point is, it's like they don't even look at the news. The news is not being reported fairly, but at least you need to look at what the news is to understand what the public is being fed. I mean, mm-hmm. look at this whole thing with how the Chauvin thing got spun.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, as we talked about on last week's program, you know, Derek Chauvin was found guilty in Minneapolis of the George Floyd murder, and Huffington Post, there was a story by the Associated Press that came out, and Huffington Post headlined it, "Cops killed 6 people in 24 16. Hours. What?
I thought it was 16.
No, cops killed 6 people in 24 hours after Chauvin verdict. And
well, there's some people that need killing.
Well, Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics on Twitter said, "Hard to imagine a more divisive, sensational, mm-hmm. contextless headline."
Yeah.
He called it a textbook example of the media being the enemy of the people. And that's exactly right.
But they're not an enemy of the narrative.
Nope.
Right, right. And that's the problem. One of the people, the 6 people killed that they were talking about, charged after someone else with a knife. And I'm sorry, when you're charging at somebody with a knife, this is why the cops have guns. Hello. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. This is what we've got to start asking here, you know, is why do you think they issue guns to the cops? You know, mm-hmm. Some people just, like you said, they need killing.
Well, yeah. On the other hand, you know, folks that want to simultaneously defund the police because they're racist, but they also police to be able to decide arbitrarily who can and can't have a gun.
Yeah, right.
So welcome to New York. But, you know, that's just this goes. Look, there's a difference in how journalism is done across the spectrum. And I was very pleased to see our friend Pete the Tech Guy tweet the following. I think yesterday it was. "Imagine going to a place and reporting what you actually see. The mainstream media will be appalled by at WJJ Hoag's journalistic heresy." I did engage in shoe leather journalism this week, which we'll get to in a little bit later. But right now, I need to stop the proceedings because we're roughly halfway through the show today. Mm-hmm. And at the halfway point is where we engage in our capitalistic exercise about describing the uses of a certain yellow button.
Yes, that's right, folks. We are greedy capitalists, which is not the same as being rich. You know, this is something that Thomas Sowell explained to me. Thomas Sowell, the difference between the rich and the poor is not that the rich are more greedy. They're just better at it. Okay. That poor people could be just as greedy as anyone else. But speaking of greed, folks, if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice near the top of the center column, the yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account. To where you can contribute dollars, pesos, yen, name some other currencies, euros. We take euros.
Renminbi.
Oh, what?
Renminbi.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So we take rubles. So, yes. You know, if there's, you know, I'm not colluding with anyone here, but, you know, Boris, if you're listening, you know, I'm not saying I'm will sell out, but
Boris, let's send you pounds.
Anyways, but folks, please hit the yellow button. And meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's blog, Hoagwash.com.
Ah, yes, lurking at the very top of the sidebar is the tip jar icon. Click on that, be taken away to my PayPal account where you have support. Hey, Hoagwash. Or you can scroll down a couple of notches there, and there's a picture of a hat. Click on that. You'll wind up at the Hoagwash store where you can buy all sorts of stuff. Let's just call it stuff, branded in various ways associated with the blog. That when I cheerfully cash the checks for that when they come in. Or you can do your Amazon shopping at various places around the internet other than at Amazon, because you see, Amazon has this really nifty keen thing called the Amazon Associate Program, and bloggers who provide you with those approved links get a cut of the action when you do the shopping using the link, and you'll find them at Hoagwash, and you'll find them at the Other McCain, as well as other wonderful spots around the interwebs. Great way to support a blogger. Regardless, here's the message, and it's the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. And we'll be very grateful when you do. Meanwhile, we've kind of reached the follow the money stage. I had a post up on the 27th titled, I'll just leave this right here. It was a filing with the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services about a fundraising
venture.
Yes. Basically, it was the end of the year report for an organization.
No, it was an application.
Well, yeah, that's true. This was just the application, although it did have some pro forma figures, it looked like. Anyway, we happen to have amongst our vast Hoagwash research organization, an expert in not-for-profit governance.
Oh, yeah.
Do we want to do it? Well, actually, there's a wonderful Johnny at Sign episode. as well, but why don't we let the real expert talk instead of that? Diana, what did you find?
Well, first of all, you and I both noted the obvious. An LLC in nonprofit world usually is a coalition of nonprofit entities that have come together on a particular project, program, or endeavor. Now, that's a technical thing, and a lot of people are too naive to know that. So we'll just treat that as possibly the filer didn't understand.
By the way, who was the filer?
Rebecca Jones. She is filing for an organization she has established, which is called Florida COVID Action LLC. Its purpose is kind of redundant. It's going to convey a whole bunch of information to the public, but it's going to be, there's no way that it's anything but dependent upon the same numbers that are being reported to the state, even if they do a county by a really granular county by county analysis. I don't know. Anyway, the big thing takeaways here are they have not applied, FCA has not applied for 501c3 status. And that would send any foundation or serious donor away from them because you can't do it. You just can't. If they're not a 501c3, you cannot make them a grant. The other thing was that if this is based on, if FCA is claiming expertise in statistical analysis, it would help if they could do basic arithmetic.
Oh.
You can't, the filing says that they have raised $55,000, an even amount.
That could happen because it could be like an initial grant.
That could be an initial grant. That could be some way that they've hived off that exact sum. That's fair enough. It happens all the time. But the thing is that on their summary page, they say that they also have $51,000 in expenses and a remaining balance of $4,000. Well, when you get to the statement of functional expenses, column A is $20,000. I won't go into the details here. That's boring. But you have $20,000. And in column B, which is management in general, you have $21,000. And in fundraising, you have $1,000. This adds up to $42,000. So no matter what, you have $9,000 out there wandering the ether, unaccounted for and unloved.
Well, one of my commenters suggested that it perhaps it had been used to buy information from foreigners, but I noted that was four years ago.
But that should still somehow be accounted for. When you're talking functional expenses, you're supposed to, like, you know, account for stuff.
What you're saying is that the paperwork she filed for this organization has got more red flags than a May Day parade in Beijing.
Correct. Into the bargain, it's just freaking incompetent. I mean, all it took was saying that you'd spent $9,000 establishing the organization. Also, round numbers. Everything is round numbers. There isn't a single, there's 10,000, 5,000, 750, 250, 1,500, 8,000. I mean, at no point is there a number that isn't absolutely even, which makes getting your sums wrong truly absurd.
Nothing was bought for 1998.
Correct. And, you know, that's just, I'm sorry. I run a business. Sometimes you spend $6.38.
I have never had a credit card statement from Staples with a round number on it.
Post at hogwash.com is called "I'll Just Leave This Right Here." And it's right. It's in plain sight.
The thing is, I'm not the first person to have posted that report on the internet.
Oh,
no. And, it was posted on a site that, Jones has falsely claimed was posted by Christina Pashaw. Christina Pashaw has nothing to do with the website that I got that off of. You can also find that's public information.
You can find it the
state of Florida as well. But yep. Jones is claiming that posting that public document is harassment. No, it isn't.
Wait, posting public documents is harassment?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, she also claimed that the website that I got that off of has a bunch of QAnon stuff. And the QAnon stuff apparently is all Florida public records, things like, or things that she actually wrote and posted on the internet herself. Oops. And she claims that the that website has family pictures of her family. The only pictures on the website are her mugshots.
Oh, okay.
So there's a certain credibility issue that you begin to see with Ms. Jones. Because Christina Pashaw had written a well-documented article for Human Events, Jones tried to get a peace order against Ms. Pashaw. Now, I should point out, you notice I'll say tried to get a peace order, because yesterday at a final peace order hearing, the petition was denied. And the reason was petitioner could not meet required burden of proof. In other words, she didn't have any evidence. This is exactly the same thing that Aaron Walker went through in Montgomery County in 2012, or that I went through in 2015, or that other people have done, by people who are trying to use this Maryland peace order law to engage in shut-uppery. Basically, it's a whole anti-First Amendment sort of thing that's going on. So, by the way, there was a Johnny @sign episode about this. His investigations on the front end. There's also a Blognet episode up for those of you who are fans of Blognet. Joe Friday and Liz Smith were back investigating that. And you can find that on Hogwash. It posted yesterday evening. So the other thing that got posted at Hogwash about this Jones matter was a post this morning. It's called One of Us is Wrong. Yesterday, she posted this tweet, and I quote, "A judge in my case against Pashaw just ruled that bloggers / political consultants can harass, stalk, and harm any, quote, public figure, unquote, they want to, no matter how false or threatening. Pashaw admitted to the court that she had used multiple accounts to harass me, but still lied on others." I did a quote tweet, retweet of that, and my response was, "This is not true. The judge made no such ruling, and Ms. Pashaw made no such admission." Jones then responded to by blocking me, which, you know, is futile. I mean, I guess if she doesn't want to hear me, she won't block me. She could have muted me, but she's blocked me, which, you know, supposedly now I can't see her tweets, which is nonsense. Uh-huh. All you have to do is log out and come back in as a you know, someone who go back to Twitter, not logged in, and you can see everything you want to see. So that hasn't stopped me from looking at what she's tweeting. And at least at the last time I checked, she hasn't posted any corrections. She hadn't posted any retractions. Well, Jones has tweeted, though, that she intends to appeal the denial of the peace order. And she goes on mentioning that she intends to bring a lawyer and two tech experts. Well, you know, it would be wise for her to review her tweets and posts since all this started with that lawyer and get advice on which of the tweets and posts she might want to take down and apologize for.
But as for her claim of harassment, I believe there's a Latin phrase, res judicata.
Well, so far, you would have to come up with some event that has happened more recently than what she was claiming. And in fact, the judge told her she would have to do that when she said she was going to file for a new peace order. And by the way, if she files for a peace order, the temporary hearing will be before the same judge who just denied that one. So, you know, good luck. Of course, she can appeal to the circuit court, and it is Montgomery County, so we'll see. But, you know, like I said, it would be wise for her to consult the lawyer on what she should take down and what she should apologize for. The ram hasn't touched the wall
yet.
It's a little bit of a Latin phrase there. You're going to teach you some medieval tactics, as it were.
Well, actually, it's from Caesar. It's
some ancient history there. John didn't actually know Julius Caesar, but he personally.
But he admires him anyway.
He's old. He's not that old.
Well, it was 1960.
They used to teach Latin in high school.
Yes, it was 19. Actually, it was in the second half of Latin II that we read Caesar. So that would have been this time of year, 3 years ago. I mean, 63. Yeah, so 58 years ago. That was taking Latin to a reading season.
We'll now leave the Mediterranean basin and proceed to the former Warsaw Pact nations.
Well, actually, yes, but we're talking about a country that borders the Black Sea, where there were, in fact, Roman settlements by the third century. There is an interesting connection that I found while perusing Mrs. Jones' Twitter account. She tweeted this just about the time she got made the peace order application. I have to thank @AVindman words of encouragement for finding the strength to go this route. The support of my academic community and all of you who have refused to buy the propaganda people are peddling. @AVindman. So I clicked on that link, and Alexander S. Vindman,
oh Lord,
husband to @NatSec lobbyist, father, brother, son, vet, defender of Constitution, former NSC/White House staff.
Oh, good God.
Oh, that A. Vindman. Say, didn't he have a problem with insubordination, too?
Among other things.
Yeah. So anyway, that's an interesting coincidence. By the way, there was a quote of the day for the 29th at Pugwash saying, "I believe in coincidences. Coincidences happen every day. I don't trust coincidences." And that's from Elam Garrick. And I'll leave that to the Deep Space Nine fans to remember. So one of the coincidences about Ukraine was, did you notice that the feds have raided Rudy Giuliani, among others, they're doing some sort of thing about an investigation about people with Ukrainian connections? Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
Something like that would come up right now that all this stuff is going on.
Coincidence.
Yes, it's good. But NBC reported that Biden says that he was not informed about any of this investigation before he heard about it when the rest of us did.
Yeah, right.
We parked the car out back. You were taking good care of the car. We'll tell your brother. And then we came out and it was gone. Will he believe that? It's got to work better than the truth. That's from Animal House.
Well, yeah.
Think that'll work? It's got to work better than the truth. Yeah. Well,
actually, that's the third best line from the movie. The best one, of course, is...
Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Yes, but the best line is, "I'd like 10,000 marbles, please."
Oh my God! Yes. Anyways, but yes, sure. Joe Biden, he didn't know anything about raiding his political opponents.
Yeah, right.
But right, remember, Trump was the authoritarian, right?
Yeah, right.
But whose political allies are getting swooped up and raided? They raided some grandma. Was it Seattle?
In Alaska.
Yeah.
She isn't a grandma. She's just a there's a whole bunch of stuff. They're looking for Nancy Pelosi's laptop. They raided an inn in Homer, Alaska, because the owners attended the rally. They never were in anywhere near the Capitol. But they actually broke into their house and pointed guns at them and demanded Nancy Pelosi's laptop. Tell me again what the heck is going on in this country?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not going to get that from the traditional media.
No, you're not.
We're going to update some old news here about an old friend of ours.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call him a friend.
Well, an old acquaintance.
Yes.
Who would not be forgotten.
No. Basically, for those of you who've been following our blogs for the last 9 or so years, you may remember the name Brett Kimberlin, a person who actually got us involved in this First Amendment lawfare stuff because of a Montgomery County bogus peace order back in 2012. But anyway, Kimberlin has had an incredible pro se campaign of losing lawsuits since all that started. But there have been some other lawsuits where he's actually had counsel involved, and he's been losing those as well. And we can add one more mark in Kimberlin's loss column. One of the lawsuits that he's been tangentially connected to via his Protect Our Elections /EMPR operation. By the way, the EMPR is the Euromaidan public relations website, which is a Ukrainian news outlet. Anyway, 6 years ago at Hogwash, I posted a copy of the complaint in a lawsuit called Public Citizen et al. Versus Federal Election Commission, and one of the plaintiffs in that lawsuit was Protect Our Elections.org, which literally was his
401c4.
No, actually, at that point, protectourelections.org was his 401c3.
Oh, 501c3.
At that point, it was a deep and still is a DBA of Justice Through Music. So this was Kimberlin's 501c3 was one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. And basically, they were all upset about what the Federal Election Commission had done with respect to something that had to do with Crosswords GPS, which is a Republican.
It's a conspiracy theory.
Well, anyway, on March 17th, it took a while for this to get around to me. On March 17th, summary judgment was granted for the defendant, Federal Election Commission, and defendant intervener, Crosswords GPS.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they lost on summary judgment. Kimberlin lost on summary judgment. And do you know what the really sweetest part of this is for us, Stacey?
Mm-hmm.
It's the 17th of March, 2021, when this was went down on summary judgment.
Yes.
Was the 6th anniversary of our
victory in federal court
over Kimberlin on the RICO 1 lawsuit. So it came on a nice anniversary for us.
Yes, we called that the Kimberlin versus the universe et al.
Well, you and I had at one point 22 other defendants.
Yeah. They sued he sued everybody pro se, and it included some people who could afford some really good lawyers,
like Simon and Schuster Publishing, James O'Keefe,
Michelle Malkin, Eric Erickson. Yeah. He sued everyone.
Lee Stranahan. It was amazing. Well, you know, it's just another example of crazy people being dangerous.
Yes, folks. And speaking of crazy people being dangerous, you know, in a few minutes, you'll hear the outro music, which is also the intro music. It's Lynyrd Skynyrd, Call Me the Breeze. Okay. They call me the breeze. I keep blowing down the road. And the reason that's my theme song is that back around 2009, 2010, when the Tea Party movement was getting involved in political campaigns, I did a lot of road work, and I continued on up through the 2012 election. And I would rent a car often and go driving through these districts. And I did some high speed driving somewhere. There is a picture of the speedometer, and I've got a 16-ounce beverage in my hand, smoking a cigarette at 110 mile an hour.
Oh.
Allegedly, I hasten to add. So I know a thing or two about high-speed driving, and one of the key things is never do it at night. Because at night you can't see the troopers. Okay. The thing is that if you come to the top of a hill on a straight road, you can look and see, are there any troopers there? And you fly onto, but anyways.
No, actually, I used to drive at least 110 miles an hour out west on Route 66 and on I-40 because you could see the troopers more easily.
Heck yeah.
Because of the full reflective badges on their doors.
Oh,
so, but it's a different condition, probably.
Well, anyways, but it was 1:30 on a Sunday morning. In other words, someone was leaving a bar, I'm guessing. Jennifer Carvajal was behind the wheel of a Hyundai Elantra, clocked at 111 miles an hour, headed west on I-4 by a Florida State Trooper. It was 1:30. Three passengers were in the car with Carvajal, who did not have a driver's license because she had violated her probation. What was she on probation for? DUI manslaughter in 2014. Yeah, that's right. Apparently, you can kill somebody while driving drunk in Florida and you're back on the streets in just a few years. So she had been sentenced to 5 years in prison in 2016, but was released in 2019. According to Hillsborough Circuit Court clerk records, she was then arrested in May 2020 for violating her probation with a drug-related charge and was sentenced to 5 more years of probation. Oh, you violate your probation. They could send you back to prison, but no, she just gets 5 more years of probation. And so anyways, it's 1:30 in the morning, 111 miles an hour. The trooper comes out. He flips on the blue light. And he has to gun, you know, coming from a standing stop. He really has to pour it on to catch up with her. Yeah. And she slows down just a little bit. But then she had a genius idea. Right turn.
Oh, God.
I've got the video. It's on the post. It's called Florida Woman Was in a Big Hurry to Reach Her Destination, Prison. Okay. And I posted the video that you can see what happens when you turn right on the interstate. God. She goes down into the ditch, up the other side, and it's like the Dukes of Hazzard. She catapults into the air, smashes through a fence, a light pole, a tree, bounces off a truck, catapults in over end before finally crashing down. And unfortunately, One of her passengers was killed. So this will be her second DUI manslaughter case, and it's all on video. But yeah, it's easy to laugh at Florida woman until makes a right turn at 111 miles an hour and kills somebody. But as we say, we have there's that boogie-woogie piano in the background that tells me that it's time to say goodnight. We're coming to the end. Remember, folks, every week, 7 o'clock, we're going to be right here with another episode of the other podcast. John, you got anything to say?
Yeah, good night, folks. And good night, Diana. And good night.
Good night.
Good night. Makes me feel right. Mr. Breeze.